Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, June 27, 2006, Carrboro Board of Aldermen public hearing meeting. This is the last meeting of the summer until August 15th, and we consequently have a few action items that are on our agenda that are not a part of our public hearing night because they need to be taken care of before the summer break begins. But before we begin our regular agenda, I would just like to say that I know all of us on the Board of Aldermen and in the town of Carrboro are have been deeply struck by the loss of a member of our community, and I just thought I would read briefly something that Jennifer Ferris of the Chapel Hill Herald wrote in this morning's paper. In 1968, Rodney Murray, who was then 19 years old, joined the Chapel Hill Police Department, and only a year later he was chosen as Firefighter of the Year. At the time, Chapel Hill had a joint fire and police program. During the 26 years he served on that force, he was awarded 16 letters of appreciation and 4 commendations. While having dinner at Slugs at the Pines in Chapel Hill in May 1990, Murray saved a woman from choking and was later honored with a life-saving award for the rescue. When President Bill Clinton visited in 1993, Rodney Murray was one of the 2 Chapel Hill firefighters assigned to the president's security detail. Murray beat out 160 applicants for the job of Carrboro's fire chief in 1993. When he joined the force in 1994, he immediately became the team's biggest advocate, lobbying for more employees, higher salaries, and other locations. A series of fires along North Greensboro Street were investigated as arson, and Murray headed a team that looked into the 20 small fires. A firefighter on Rodney's force was seriously injured during a house fire that proved to be arson. Murray supported the family of the firefighter throughout the recovery. In August 2000, Rodney Murray assisted in the birth of a baby boy born in the parking lot of Berkshire Manor Apartments. Knowing the town was having budget problems, in 2002, he helped his firefighting force remodel its headquarters by hand. It's estimated that he saved the town some $500,000 by using the firefighters' labor. A second Carrboro Fire substation to serve the northern section of the town is expected to begin construction next year, and Murray had argued for that site since 1996 and assisted in the negotiations, if I may add, and assisted in the negotiations for obtaining that site. Rodney worked for me in 2 different capacities, and I considered him a good friend of mine, and I know that all of us on the Board of Aldermen, our thoughts and prayers are with Rodney and with his family. And I'd like to ask everybody to join in a moment of silence in remembering Rodney Murray. Thanks very much. Let's begin with our consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Item 1 is the approval of the minutes of the previous meetings of June 6th and June 13th of 2006. Item 2 is a request to award a contract for design and construction management contract administration services for fire station number 2. And if I could just add, I know Rodney would be smiling right now about this being on the agenda tonight. Item 3 is a request to adopt a budget ordinance, and item 4 is a request to make an appointment to the Orange County Solid Waste Advisory Board.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I'd like to pull item 2 for just a minute, if I could, please.
Okay.
Items 1, 3, and 4.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded A1, A3, A4. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passes unanimously. Item A2, Jackie, you had a question.
Thank you. On page B25, where it outlines the project approach, and it starts with program schematic design phase, it was my understanding that we were going to have a community meeting to get, particularly of, well, the whole community, but with special emphasis on on the folks in the northern part of the town to get their input on the design of the fire station. I don't see that in here.
We clarified that in the interview with them, and that would be in this in the first phase. They just they didn't spell it out in detail here, but in the interview we had that conversation.
I'll vote for this, but will it be specified in the contract?
Yes, it will, and it's in the RFQ, specifically that there would be a public charrette early in the process.
And do they have experience with public charrettes?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You good with that?
Okay, is there a motion?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, they're passing unanimously. Mr. Manager, item B1.
Okay. Item B1 is a public hearing on a minor modification to the conditional use permit for 201 North Greensboro Street to allow an open-air market. Chris Frank, who represents Public Gallery of Carborough, WCOM Radio, has submitted an application for a minor modification to an existing conditional use permit to allow an open-air market at 201 North Greensboro Street. Pursuant to Section 15-64B, the Town of Carborough Land Use Ordinance, a minor modification to a conditional use permit is permissible with the approval of the Board of Aldermen. Staff requests that the Board review, deliberate, make a decision regarding the minor modification to the existing CUP. We don't have a staff presentation unless the Board requests one this, since we've made this presentation at a previous Board meeting, and we're prepared for you all to move into the public hearing unless you have questions of staff.
Are there any comments actually first from the applicant for the permit? If you would come up.
I should be largely my opinion to the best of my knowledge, I think. But well, as you know, WCOM is trying to start this in order to raise funds for keeping the station on the air as a vital part of the community. And we requested this change. I would like to just address some of these the recommendations. We're trying to start a small business here, a very small business. It takes a lot of time, energy, and money to start any small business. As you probably all know, there's no money. WCOM probably has 50 cents in the bank. So it's going to be all volunteer effort to get this going. So originally we asked that we just simply be given the permit without a time limit on it. And I see staff has again suggested that it only be temporary until December 31st. I mean, it still puts us in the same situation of putting all the front-end effort into it to try to get it moving with the possibility that in December, they say, sorry, it's not working, you can't do it anymore. You know, it's a significant restriction given the amount of time it's going to take to put the whole thing together. It's all volunteers. You know, this is not going to morph into the Buckhorn Jockey Lot. Right? I mean, there's only so many of us out there willing to put the hours in to make it happen. It feels like we're being sort of told, okay, you can open a small business under these circumstances. Here's when you can be open, and here's what you can sell. So it's extremely limited. In all likelihood, it will only be on Saturdays because that's when most of the people are there. But we would certainly love the opportunity, maybe on an evening or whenever the market will bear, if we could have some other events happening there, which might involve some sort of open-air market. The limitations, well, I mean, I think it's sort of self-limiting by virtue of the number of, the amount, simply amount of square footage we have. On number six, I don't think any other business around there is required to put signs in their business asking their patrons not to park in the Century Center parking lot. So what we would request is that we simply be given the permit to carry forward without, at least 1, 2, 3, and 6. I think that's just really kind of micromanaging the effort.
Alex and then Dan. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, does anybody else want to speak on this item?
I've just got a couple of questions for Berkeley.
Go right ahead, please.
So, Berkeley, you're speaking as a representative of COM.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how other people would feel about this. Typically, for outdoor situations, we will often impose some time restrictions for obvious reasons, that, you know, just to avoid conflict with neighbors and those issues. Would y'all feel comfortable? And so some delineation of that is probably reasonable. So would you feel comfortable, though, opening it up to, for example, substituting rather than Saturdays, weekends, say from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. seems like reasonable weekend hours, mm-hmm. and then weekdays no longer or no later than, say, 8 or 9, something like that? How do you think you guys react to that?
I think that would be fine. I mean, yeah. just to give a little more latitude.
A little more flexibility.
I mean, it's going to be what will the market bear. I mean, how many sure. people are going to want to come there and pay a certain fee to sit there, you know, if there aren't people there, if there's not something happening? I mean, there's just, I can't imagine that it would grow into this gigantic, you know, all-week-long event.
Right. But so that you'd have, anyway, I'm just interested in what other people's reaction to that.
Sure.
That is. The other, I understand your annoyance with the sign issue, but believe you me, it's for your own good, because it'll avoid conflicts. The other question I have is, we have a letter from Nathan Million, who has concerns about parking issues. Would you guys be willing to, let's assume that we're going to ask you to mm-hmm. erect that sign, also include Carmel and other private lots?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, just so that everybody knows the deal, and that way Nathan's not going to be all over you, I think that would, frankly, just help them eliminate conflicts and problems. How do people... Would people react to that?
Actually, before we continue with that, I forgot. But we need to recuse Alderman Herrera because he's on the board of directors of the African organization. So if we could,
it's
been moved and seconded. All those in favor of recusing Alderman Herrera, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. So Alderman Herrera is not feeling well, so I'm going to ask him to stay here during the meeting.
We will proceed regardless. We just want as much latitude to make it work.
So you can
clearly understand there are going to be restrictions.
Yes,
you all understand.
Right. So you can live with that, though.
Yeah,
right. Sure. Okay. Okay. Those are all the questions I have for right now.
Okay. Jackie.
I understand your concerns, and I think what you're doing is a good thing. I think the radio station's wonderful for Carville, and it's a great way to bring in support for the radio station. We often, when we're doing something new, put a sunset on it, mm-hmm. and that doesn't mean that in December we're going to say go away. It just means that in December, it's like getting a new job and being on probation for the first 90 days. It's just to see. It gives us a little bit more leverage if things are out of whack. I don't expect them to be out of whack, but staff's job is to be conservative.
Sure.
So I really don't have any problem with, I mean, you're going to be having the same board in December that you have today. I don't see any problem with the December sunset clause, so that we can revisit it and say, how is this working? And there might be some concerns that you have that you say, oh, could you tweak this and make it work better for us? So I don't think it's a gotcha kind of thing. It's more the staff doing their job and being conservative.
Got to ask.
Yeah, sure. And that's your job. Your job's to push.
Mr. Attorney, does there come a point in this where we need to close a public hearing before we consider a resolution? Or
You will need to close the public hearing before you, I think, begin your official consideration and vote on the matter.
Okay, because it seems to me we might be ready for that.
Move the public hearing be closed.
Oh, well, Mr. Million wants it.
Well, you just said we were ready.
Okay. Well, come on.
First you tell me we're on vacation and we're not. Then you tell me we're closing the public hearing and we're not. That's right.
Just wait till you see what we've got in store for you, Jackie.
These
oils
are
about to
give to the best of your knowledge.
Yes, I do.
Hi, Nathan.
How's everyone this evening? Thanks for letting me stand up here for a minute or two. Just wanted to point out a couple of quick things. I did send you a letter in opposed to this. It's a noble cause. clearly we all want to see the radio station succeed. Clearly there should be some avenue for them to be able to raise money to support the radio station. I think everyone would agree on that. We agree with that. However, if an open-air market is taking their parking places and turning them in to retail locations, the people who are the vendors, and I've been told that it could be up to 20 or 25 vendors, that virtually is every parking place in that parking lot. So if you say every one of those vendors had to bring their stuff on a vehicle, then where is their vehicles going to park, much less anyone who's coming to trade outside of just a few block area with them. So we have real deep concerns. What happens is it's best intentions with the signage and all that. It still is a burden on the other downtown businesses, their limited parking, and it's an increased cost to the merchants at Carmel Mall for having it up to have increased security. And we don't like to have to run people out of our parking lot, you know, that don't belong, that are parking there and leaving. And so it's not only a cost, we don't like to do it. It doesn't look good. And so anyway, we're asking you to please consider, let's encourage them to find another way to raise money and not go along with this. Yes, sir.
Nathan, how do you react to the idea of, okay, let's say, for example, that we did grant them the modification in general, but would you feel better if we asked them to, again, as I said earlier, include signage that specifically asked them not to park in your lot? And how about if we did this? How about if we asked them on that signage to include information directing them to the municipal lot over on Weaver Street, directing customers over there?
Municipal lot on Weaver Street?
Yeah.
The one across the street?
Yeah.
No, there's one down by
Sparrows.
Yeah. By Sparrows.
Right, I've said across the street, but it's not, yeah. That's what I mean. It's kind of across
right,
the street.
Right, across
kind
the street.
Of like that way across the street.
That make you feel a little bit better, Nathan, with that?
Well, I mean, where are the vendors going to park? I mean, that's my question. Where are the vendors going to park? And they may have even an answer for that, but we're requested. I'm not going to beat the dead horse or whatever, but
okay.
We would really like for you to consider encourage them to go another route, and we'll live with whatever you decide, obviously. So
cool.
Thank you for your consideration. Anybody else want to ask?
Thanks, Nate.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Nathan.
Berkeley had a response.
Yeah, Berkeley, if you want to come back up. We're not going to keep going back and forth, but briefly.
Well, this permit only covers the main building, not the parking lot. So we can only have vendors around the main Community Realty and station. The parking lot is available. All of the vendors will park in the parking lot. So there's not an issue about where the vendors will park.
Well, the vendors are going to be on that mulch that you threw down over the old lot.
Yeah, there will be vending on the in front of the station and then around, you know, at the front.
Right.
And I think some of the mulch is going to be removed to make more room. And so clearly you can't charge someone $20 or whatever per day and not give them parking space. So every one of the vendors will, as we plan it, be provided with space in the lot. So there won't be any vendors parking all day in any of the other lots.
The vendors will all be on Greensboro Street side.
Right.
And the parking lot on the Weaver Street side will remain a parking lot.
Exactly.
Okay.
So is that what you meant when you said self-limiting? It's going to be self-limited by the amount of spots that the vendors have to park?
That was certainly my projection. I mean, as someone who did that kind of vending for a long time, I certainly would not, you know, I'm going to object if you're going to charge me and then tell me, go find yourself a space somewhere. I mean, I don't think that you would get many vendors who'd want to do that.
Just out of curiosity, I don't know how many spaces there are on the Greensboro side. Do you
26?
Know?
26.
On the Weaver Street,
Weaver Street side.
Well, that's what I meant,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, common sense just tells you, I mean, all you got to do is walk down the damn street and look at the place, and it's very compact. There's just not a lot of space. So, you know, there are only going to be so many vendors you can squeeze in there.
I still would support the signage being specific.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, let's get to that question after the public hearing is closed, which now, Jackie, would be the time.
No, somebody else do it.
You know what?
There's
one more speaker who wishes to speak, so come on up.
Hi, swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give us the truth to the best of your knowledge.
I actually hadn't planned on saying anything. I was just kind of listening to the project and knowing very little about it. But I am next door on 203 North Greensboro Street. And unfortunately, this is probably a bad time to talk to me about parking because I've been having a kind of a crisis over the last 6 months in becoming a satellite parking lot for just about every event known to man because of my location. And unfortunately, recently, I've had damage, some vandalism, some people who, and I did start having towing, random towing, I'm not calling, it's, but because I would come in on Sunday to do work at my office and have no parking spaces in my own lot, not even handicapped spot was available. It bothers me in that some, I've gotten letters, I've gotten phone calls about not having the parking available when I was not officially in business, that I owed communities, and actually the calls and letters have been from out of town. They've addressed themselves mostly from Durham for some strange reason, but probably purely coincidental. But I do have to maintain, my lot is gravel, I do have to maintain it. I've had them drive actually recently through the flower beds horizontally. Fortunately, Ruff and Slater from Weaver Street was nice enough because he feels that they're probably his patrons, has sent someone over to rake out the mulch. But I do have some serious concerns about, you know, if we're saying that this is kind of open-ended as far as during the week and, you know, on the weekends, and if I have to come in for an emergency, and I mean, how long does the list get of private lots that you're going to have on this sign that you're making these four people put up? It's going to be, you know, people running all over the place trying to figure out, all right, well, they're still parking in the lot. And Weaver Street's recently roped off my lot during events because it's just gotten so out of control that I can't even get out at night before people are parking me in. So I do have some concerns about parking, and, you know, that's...
Oh, and could you state your name? That's obvious, but could you state your name for the...
Oh, I'm sorry, it's Deborah Seaton.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Seaton. Okay, is there anybody else? Okay, now.
All right, move public hearing to close.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we close the public hearing. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Move the resolution with the following amendments. Under number item number 2, that the open air market will take place on weekends between the hours of 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. and no later than 9 p.m. weekdays. Item number 6, let me just try this language and see if it's not too terribly cumbersome. At least 2 signs approximately 4 feet in size shall be placed around the market, yada, yada, yada. They may not park in the Carver Century Center parking lot, comma, Carmel, or surrounding private lots. And to include language directing customers to the Weaver Street Municipal Lot. And you guys can edit that, right, Berkeley? Okay. That's the motion.
What about looking at the sunset? Giving an assessment.
Yeah, were you leaving number 1?
Yeah, leaving that in. That's the, okay. Yeah. So we can check back in with the folks and if stuff ain't working, work it out.
Okay.
Well, I think that's.
Is there a second for that?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's hanging out there.
Okay.
I have to say, if you don't mind me jumping in for a second, Dan, I'm really, you know, it sounds like a pretty good motion, Alex, but I'm really bothered by stipulation number 1 in this proposal that we have this December 31st, 2006 limitation on the permit. I guess my issue is this, and I think that some of the speakers tonight, you know, may not necessarily have fully appreciated this, but outdoor sales of goods is an allowable use. It's a permitted use
in that zoning district. They're proposing to do something that our zoning ordinance fundamentally allows. And it seems to me that, you know, if somebody comes in here and asks for permission to open any kind of store in downtown Carver, that it would that generally we would consider whether that type of store is permitted under the ordinance, what kind of parking requirements there may be, and that type of thing. And if they meet the requirements of the ordinance, that we give them permission to open their store and start business and operate. And we don't say to them, well, you can operate for the next 6 months. We say, well, here's your permit, go off and go to work. Because in order to open a store, you've got to invest, you know, handily $100,000, if not $500,000, in order to get. Those are the types of commitments that you have to make. Now, I think in this particular case, I don't suppose this applicant is committing those kind of resources, but still they're committing such resources as they have to making this operation work. And to me, to say to them, for some reason, and I'd be interested to hear a reason, but other than that this is a very popular intersection, and that doesn't seem to be of any consequence to me legally. I don't see any reason that if we're going to issue them a permit, that we can't just issue them a permit to carry on the activity that's permitted under the ordinance. So I don't think I can support any version of this resolution that has item number one still in it.
Convinced me.
I'd like to see this as a leg of a pilot because it has the potential to really bump some other patrons, and I think assessment on both sides is important on the town's side and also on the side of the WCOM. I'd like to see in December how they think it's going, how viable they feel it is. And get further feedback from the folks whose parking is private, and how much impact it has on them.
What do you mean by bump other patrons? You mean from other parking lots? Is that what you're talking about?
Right,
parking?
The overflow. And of course, December is, you know, it's winter time. There, you know, some of the Weaver Street Market things are not happening on Thursdays and Sundays at that time of year. So, you know, that might be just a good time to assess. And I just have a note of caution about leaving it opened without having any, you know, assessment piece.
How about let's try something that's neither fish nor fowl? Okay. And the attorney can laugh me out of the room if this is just, I mean, beyond the realm of anything reasonable in the law, in terms of the law. How about essentially something calling for a review? That the permit doesn't necessarily expire at that time, but that stipulates that the permit shall be reviewed on or about December 31st, 2006 to identify any problems and make any necessary adjustments. Is that even, can we do that?
You can do it. I think it limits your options a little bit in terms of what actually you can do if there are problems, but it's up to the board. You can do it.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Mm-hmm. So what would we have to do, for example, if there were problems with parking, if there were problems with people or trucks delivering items to Weaver Street? What if there are problems about getting in and out of that intersection on Saturdays? Because, you know, it's been, I guess, what I want to know, what authority do we have to modify their permit if circumstances change and those difficulties arise?
Well, I think that's the problem with not having an expiration date, is you really don't have, you've already approved it. And that approval runs with the land until someone decides they want to do something different with the property, and then they come back to you. By having some kind of a sunset clause in there, if those circumstances that Alderman Brown just spoke about arise between now and then, it gives you, the board, the opportunity to say, wait, this is not working. And either we say you can't do this, or say you can only continue to do it if we impose or we work out these additional conditions.
Right. That's what my language was getting at, which was that on or about December 31st, that the town would have the opportunity to would review the permit, and that it would be clear in the permit that at that time, if the town should choose to impose new conditions.
Well, is you know, expiration or termination one of the conditions that's within the,
well, it's,
the board's
I mean, I guess I'm assuming that, that given, well, tell me this. I mean, given that, if the town then were to impose new conditions at that time, and the applicant said those conditions were not acceptable, well, then by default, wouldn't the permit expire then?
Well, I'm not so sure.
Well, okay.
Well, I'd just like to say the reason why I asked that question was to determine whether or not, if those issues arise, what we could do. And so that when the board making the decisions not to place limitations or an expiration, know exactly what they're doing when they're going into it. I support WCOM. I think it is a great facility. But I have some concerns because this is one of our main intersections.
Well, you know what? I was trying to accommodate more.
Well, I'm not quite finished yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's one of our main intersections. There is a lot of volume. And anyone who knows that if you're trying to get through that way, and a lot of people avoid going through that way, you know, if, and I would hope that the open air market would be, you know, very popular, but with that popularity brings about traffic. And, you know, I certainly understand the mayor's concern about the fact that we certainly don't put expiration dates and permits on other businesses that that come into Carrboro, and we want to encourage businesses to come into Carrboro. But on the other hand, you know, as my law school professor, constitutional professor, told me, no one's rights are absolute. And we do have to think about neighbors and also Carrboro as a whole. So I personally could not support it without an expiration date because I don't want to give up that authority should something arise. And things may change in December.
Dan.
So we want to double commercial square footage downtown, but we don't want anything that will bring traffic. I don't understand that notion. I also don't understand. I'm very troubled by what I see as discrimination against this applicant, that, you know, some of which is what Mark is alluding to. And I also think the items 5 and 6 here that to do with parking, I just think those are grossly unfair, that when we don't require any other business to have those kind of signs. And who knows where the customers of, you know, whoever, Fido or, you know, Tyler's has their own little lot for about 6 cars. But, you know, who knows where those customers are going. And so we're going to review this in December, supposedly. And so let's say because the vendors are now parking at the on-site lot there, that the customers who are parking there now to go to Weaver Street Market or to Carmel instead go and park at Dr. Seaton's lot. And we hear about it from Dr. Seaton, and so we say to WCON, we're not going to renew your permit. I mean, my point is that if there's a parking problem downtown to do with signage, to do with people knowing where to park, to do with businesses informing their customers where to park, we ought to address that as a downtown parking discussion and apply it equitably to all businesses, and that this is not the place to be cherry-picking that. I see this as something that's going to bring a lot of foot traffic, that the people going to the farmers market are going to walk there, the people who you see every Saturday walking from Weaver Street Market to the farmers market and back are going to go to this open-air market. You know, and so some more people might drive into town, and they'll park, hopefully, at the public lot, and they'll walk there, and they'll walk to the farmer's market, and they'll walk to the businesses in Carmel and elsewhere, and it's exactly the kind of thing we want to see happening downtown, and I don't think we should be discriminating against this applicant. I agree with Mark that there should not be an expiration on this permit, and the applicant seems fine with conditions 2, 3, 4, and 7, but I am, and maybe accepting of the ones to do with parking, but I have a lot of trouble with those. I think it's wrong of us to be doing that.
I would just say that when we look at downtown development, we always make decisions about how much parking can an establishment hold. We do it all the time. That's the big issue, some of the big issue, but not all of the big issue with downtown development. So, you know, it's not really a cherry picking. It's looking at the circumstances the way they are. And, you know, I don't, you know, again, I'm not going to belabor the point. We can just vote.
Alex.
Yeah, I mean, in many respects, Joel said what I was going to say. But just to offer as a matter of historical perspective, in the downtown, in every permit application, there are all kinds of trade-offs that are made specific to the permit to deal with issues that surrounding neighbors have brought up or that staff has identified. So each permit is unique, and there are conditions attached to each unique permit to deal with those. So this is not unusual. It's not a ding, Dan. It's just as a matter of perspective. I haven't done this for a long time. It's kind of how we work through things. So specific, conditions rather that are specific to the permit are not only not unusual, they are de rigueur, if you will. And the idea is just to try to identify problems before they happen and see if we can get it set up so that everybody kind of gets along, so that it's not a Charlie Foxtrot in six months or so, and everybody's working out fine. So that's kind of the spirit.
Except that this applicant has more than the requisite parking. And so, you know, everyone's focusing on where people are going to park. That's the only tangibly identified concern, and that's a generalizable concern. You know, and the fact is that as compared to many other downtown businesses, this one is, in fact, very close to an underutilized municipal lot. It's right there.
And, anyway. I think it's notable, the Gourmet Kingdom restaurant, for example, opened up with, correct me if I'm wrong, staff, but with no parking at all. Two spaces for the entire Chinese buffet restaurant on Main Street. They have two parking spaces for that entire restaurant. That's completely the opposite situation to what this applicant's situation is. I mean, but regardless of the parking signage issues, I think, you know, it really is problematic for not only for the applicant to move forward with committing all of the resources and credibility that has to be involved in promoting an open air market here, but there's also their vendors that would come and vend there are making a commitment. They're making important strategic business decisions for themselves about whether to locate, about whether to undertake this, and to do it under the cloud, to have to make that decision under the cloud of not knowing whether the whole thing's just going to evaporate in 6 months is a very, very much of a disincentive to the people who would hopefully otherwise commit toward doing this. Furthermore, I really think the most significant part of this is, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about economic development up here, but this is a genuinely grassroots operation. This is a genuinely grassroots opportunity for somebody to go into the retailing business. I was saying a minute ago, you have to have like $100,000 in the bank to open a retail store. You won't have to have anything like that kind of resources in order to do this here. This is an opportunity for people to start true hometown grassroots businesses. I think the other thing that is really ought to be noted is that you asked the question, what will we do if there are problems? Well, let me tell you,
What will happen if there are problems is that there's a board of directors for this organization. And that board of directors is a bunch of people who live around town. So one member of the board of directors of this organization leases from Nathan Million. You know, there's a lot of opportunity for accountability here. This is going to be run by a bunch of people who live around here, who have important relationships to maintain. They're people who know James Harris. He's probably got every one of them on his speed dial. If there's problems, we'll deal with them. You know, we'll have our staff look into those situations. But I don't think that it's likely that we're going to have the kind of problems that need to come back to this board 6 months from now. If we have some hiccups, some issues, then, you know, I think neighbor to neighbor that the owner of this property will deal with that. And the owner of this property is Weaver Street Market. It's a huge institution in our community. And in fact, one of the speakers earlier in the public hearing was pointing out that in fact, when there was a neighbor to neighbor problem with Weaver Street Market, that Weaver Street Market took steps to make it right and to help deal with the problem. I don't understand.
Mark, hang on just a second here, because I want to get us back to what I had on the table. I mean, the bottom line is, if that sort of hybrid addresses nobody's concerns, I mean, does that work for you or not?
The
notion of a mandatory review in which the permit doesn't necessarily expire.
I'm open to having a review if the
and if it's favorable, why couldn't it roll over? I mean, is there?
It's just sort of flipping it the other way around, in which the default position is that the permit remains in force.
Right.
However, the town reserves the right to make adjustments or add conditions to the permit pending the review on or about December 31st. However, if that doesn't meet your objections, then I'll withdraw it. Part of what's going on here is, but I'm really not excited about this sort of subliminal implications that people who are trying to accommodate the other interests are somehow unsupportive of the enterprise. It's too bad we can't talk straight around here anymore. That's an undercurrent that's here, and I don't like it very much.
I've been raising my hand for a while.
Sorry.
Thank you. I think Mark makes a compelling argument. And I don't think I can vote for something with any kind of sunset clause in it. We talk sustainability and microenterprise all the time. You don't get any more microenterprise than this. And as we grow, we're going to grow. I've accepted that. Unless people use alternative transportation, there are going to be parking problems. And if 25 Little Booths is going to be more parking than we can handle, then wait until you see when your big buildings come in what's going to happen.
My big building, I'd be making some money off of it.
Parking, you know, parking's a problem. Parking's kind of a good problem. It means that we have a very alive downtown with a lot of people that want to be there. My original understanding of this, and I think they're right, is that this isn't going to bring more cars. That these are folks, the people that are going to come to this are people who are downtown anyway, for the most part. There may be a handful of people that come just for it, but most of it's going to be people who are downtown on Saturdays anyway. So I changed my mind. I really don't want to support anything that has a sunset clause in it, and I don't want to see these folks treated any differently than anybody else. I think it's fine to say, let's red flag this and come back in December and see if there's anything that needs to be tweaked. But I'd like them treated the way that any other business is.
Okay, then my motion still stands. I'll go ahead and use that modified language. Sounds like you can live with that, right?
I guess exactly.
Red flag.
What's the modified
language? The modified language is that the minor modification of the permit shall be reviewed on or about December 31st, 2006, to identify any problems and make any adjustments or add new conditions as necessary, period.
Can we do that?
Yeah, the attorney said, it limits our options a little bit, but
So we can add conditions.
We probably can't say stop doing it altogether. Basically the implication of that, but
we can
modify it.
Right. And that deletes the language
and
that refers, that says that refers to an expiration. Well, the date is there, but it no longer expires.
Right. The word valid.
Right.
Valid until.
Yes. That is substituted by shall reviewed, be reviewed by what we've just gone over ad nauseum.
That's right. I'm comfortable with that.
Okay. Right. And with the modified 6 as I put it before and modified 2 as I put it before.
Okay.
And I just want to say I'm glad that Alex is finally supporting WCO.
He's joking.
Okay.
He's bad joking. Alex, thank you. That's a creative solution to this situation. So it's been moved and seconded and amended and accepted, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed,
nay.
The matter passes 5-1 with Alderman Brown voting nay and Alderman Herrera excused from that vote. Okay.
This is not to say that I won't be down there when you open.
Yeah, come on down. All right. Item B2, Mr. Manager.
Item B2 is a public hearing on a conditional use permit request for the Jones property. First American Builders, as represented by Coulter Jewel Thames, PA, submitted an application for construction of a 65-lot, 65-dwelling unit subdivision located at 8112 Old 86. The conditional use permit, if approved, would allow the creation of 49 single-family detached and 16 townhome lots with associated infrastructure, including publicly dedicated streets. And Jeff Cleveland is at the podium to give an overview of the project. Jeff.
Thank you, Steve. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Jeff Cleveland, planner with the Town of Carrboro, and I was given the responsibility of reviewing this project with regards to the town's land use ordinance. Your staff reports, if you've read them, you'll find that our land use ordinance covers pretty much everything that can be covered, and so I'm not going to go detail by detail through it, but I will go give you a presentation which will give you enough information to make sense of the conditions which come at the end of the presentation, and it will orient you to the complexity of this project. So without further ado, location of the project is out on old NC86, what is now known as Harmony Farms, which is a horse riding stable. It's north of Lake Hogan Farms. It's in the northern transition area. The property's in the R20 zoning district. It's about 23 acres, which allows a base density of 48 units. The applicant is looking to make use of the affordable housing density bonus, which allows up to 72 units. They're seeking 65 dwelling units. In doing this, they'll be providing 10 affordable and 7 bonus units, and this brings them to 15.4% affordable housing. The site is adjacent to Buckhorn Branch Creek. Regarding the affordable housing management, the applicant is choosing not to use the services of Orange County Community Land Trust, but instead will be using deed restrictions, which is allowed by the land use ordinance. Long-term affordability and buyer pre-qualification are not assured by this, as the board is probably aware, so you may want to discuss this somewhat further. We won't get into it now. The advisory board summary sheet, attachment M, some of the advisory boards had some things to say about this, so you may want to refer to that, if not now, certainly later. Existing conditions. The property is fairly hilly. It drops about 40 feet, it's a long ways, from top to the bottom. The area, there's the boundary, Buckhorn Branch Creek, the floodplain, which requires field verification because these FEMA maps are not yet formally adopted. So we're in this kind of a limbo land where the applicant has to work with the town engineer to field locate the 100-year floodplains. This is an issue that will come up in the conditions. Also, our 3 town stream buffers located on the site. This gives you an idea of the vegetation. The town is by, the property is bisected by a gas transmission line. It's mainly a open field now, and you can see the riding arena to the west there. The proposed site plan, after going through this long process of meeting the land use ordinance requirement, this is the site plan that has developed. The open space in green, I didn't spell it like that, affordable units. That's the computer's work. The affordable units are located within the bank of 16 townhomes. They're in orange.
What's wrong with it?
Yeah, that's how we pronounce it in my country. The playground, as you see, is adjacent to the townhomes, and the playground is suitable for smaller children, which the ordinance requires. There's a large play field for pickup games, soccer, and whatnot. There's a gazebo, hiking trail, and a publicly dedicated greenway trail. The recreation amenities are there to meet the town's recreation requirements, which are quite significant. Grading, stormwater management, and tree protection. Again, there's the gas line. This is where the tree protection is in response to the grading plan. And in order to deal with stormwater, a system of storm sewers is distributed throughout the project. This is a little gas line crossing, which will come up as a condition in terms of, you know, field verifying the separation between this storm sewer and that gas line is going to be something we need to deal with in construction plans. Another sewer service, another gas line potential issue, stormwater sewer, and so on. These all empty into bioretention basins. There's nine of them altogether. And as you are familiar with these structures, they are engineered, highly designed filtering mechanisms designed to remove suspended solids from the stormwater runoff. And these are long-term things that require the homeowners association and the town to kind of look after and make sure they're maintained properly. If they're not installed correctly, they cease to function as filters. Exiting into these are storm sewers and also grassline swales, which are in the light blue, which also treat stormwater. Utility plan, water line in blue, sewer line in brown, street lights distributed throughout, parking area lights. These items meet the requirements of the ordinance. A water line stub out, a sewer stub out, as required by OWASA. And my fire hydrants didn't make it in here. There's three fire hydrants on the property. Let me just show you where those are. Located here. Oh, gosh, they're really hard to see from here. There's one here. Let's see here. There's one here. And there's one somewhere else. Steve, can you help me on that one? The other. Okay, right here. Okay. The fire marshal requested another fire hydrant be placed near the intersection here, and this was the condition that will be we can talk about later. In order for this project to be realized, an off-site sewer extension is necessary through the Glen Ridge Townhomes property, and this minor modification has already been approved. The Glen Ridge Townhomes open space has been dedicated but not accepted by the town. This this little extension relates to another condition in the conditions list, and we have to determine that the construction of this will not cause a rise in the 100-year flood. The condition, we can talk about that more, but should it do so, then this project will need to come back to the board so the board can determine what the extent of that damage will be considered. There's the tie-in to the proposed subdivision. Landscape plan, extensive plantings along the trees A third of the plantings are evergreen. This is just the street trees. There's hundreds of plantings that go into the bioretention basins. And upon review of this, it came to my attention that I failed to see one area where some plantings should be provided. The ordinance does require plantings along publicly dedicated street right-of-ways. And so this will be a condition added at the end.
That would be where the yellow is?
Yes, in the yellow. There are no trees proposed there currently. We have architectural standards for the affordable housing. The applicant has presented these as representative pictures. They aren't the pictures, but they're representative of what they want to do. And these have been reviewed by the Appearance Commission and to their satisfaction as to meeting the affordable, the vernacular architectural standards, land use ordinance. So zip through that. I'm at the summary recommendations. I've just gone ahead and copied onto the overhead here these recommendations. I don't know how you want to proceed from this point on. You'd like to ask some questions or?
I do have a number of questions.
We have one speaker at some point. Oh, okay. But why don't you?
Well, until after the other speaker. That's not a problem because I wrote notes.
Why don't we have our one speaker real quick, if you don't mind. Mr. Vickers, if you would come up. And while he's coming up, let me just point out that earlier, as a part of our consent agenda, we reappointed Mr. Vickers to the County Solid Waste Advisory Board, where I'm aware that he has been ably representing the town of Carrboro, and I just would like to point out that we really appreciate the service that he's been putting in.
I have it as you're about to give us the truth to the best of your knowledge.
Yes. I reckon.
Mr. Mayor, when he's done, I'd like to just say a few words on behalf of the applicant.
Okay. But we're also going to have one other, at least one other beyond that as well. Okay. Go ahead.
My name is Albert Vickers. I live in Lake Hogan Farms. I'm familiar with the project mainly because I was on the landscape committee of Lake Hogan Farms, and while I was considering part of Lake Hogan Farms, I reviewed the landscape plan, basically detail, and I very courteously review it. One of the issues I came up with, Jeff has mentioned, was the lack of trees that he put out. So that was one of my points. I made my points here in a letter that each one of the board can have. There were three items I came up with that I wanted to comment on. One was the Lake Hogan Hills Road. Hogan Hills Road is 3,000 feet long. And that's the road that goes right along here. There's a little bit of common property that belongs to Hogan Farms between it and the subject development. There is a power line easement that runs along there, too. The problem I see with Hogan Hills Road is it's the 3,000 feet. It's relatively straight. There are only two entry points between Lake Hogan Farm Road and 86. There's a 3,000-foot straight road that has two small entrances on it. There's no driveways. There's no entries to it. There's all the houses back on it. I think it's an attractive nuisance for teenagers to possibly race cars on. I think it's very important that whatever is done up there, there be something to do traffic controls on that road to make sure it's not an attractive nuisance to the neighborhood. Unfortunately, our teenagers love speed, and this would be a temptation to use it. And I really think it would be in the town's interest to have to look at this from the traffic point of view. Is there something we can do to make this less attractive as a drag strip, basically? And that's what I'm looking at. I am encouraging to consider putting on Long Meadow Drive, which is the road that comes into the townhomes that crosses Hogan Hill from Lake Hogan Farm, make that a circle, or place a circle across, there's on this common area, Lake Hogan, place just a circle in the middle of the road here, similar to the one that already exists in Hogan Farms between North and Southfield Circle. There's a circle just in the middle of the road there to slow traffic. And this has been done in other communities. I lived in the Oaks and Chapel Hill when Meadowmont was being developed, and Meadowmont was required or forced to or arranged to put a circle in Lancaster Drive and Pinehurst. It was retrofitted into two existing roads. it works very well. It worked very well. And so I think it's a reasonable accommodation. It's attractive to the neighborhood, and they work. And I suggest that that's something you consider requiring. And the third item I had is a minor item, but when I reviewed the plans, I looked at the housing units here. They face back onto the Hogan Hill Road in the front. And being on the Solid Waste Management Advisory Board, I say, where are they going to put the roll-off bins? There are no garages, and there will be roll-off bins that you're going to have collection. There is no provision in the report that I could see to provide a storage space for them that's out of sight as the town ordinance requires. I think there should be a stipulation that some provision consistent with the town ordinance is made that any of the townhomes will have a place to store their roll-off bins. That's the end of my comments. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
We're going to hear from representative of the applicant, Dan Jewell, and then Robert Dowling after him.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, fellow aldermen. My name is Dan Jewell. I'm a landscape architect with Coulter Jewell Timms, and we have been assisting the development team in taking this through. A couple other folks here tonight, Steve Bailey with our office, who's been the lead designer, Jeff Benson, Randolph Reed, Michael Chadwick, and Rob Shank, all with the development team. Jeff gave a very thorough presentation, and I'm not going to belabor that. What I am going to say is that when we first submitted the concept plan over 2.5 years ago now on this, the design ideas are still intact, and we're very gratified that as we've gone through working with the staff and the advisory boards, and this is actually the third time we've been in front of you reviewing this project, that the idea of creating these two small village green clusters at either end of this development, either end of this neighborhood, the idea of saving a substantial amount of open space is still intact. And through this process, we think those folks have actually allowed us and assisted us in making some decisions that have made it better. We have wiggled the road a little bit to save specimen trees. We've moved the townhomes around to save specimen trees. We've provided more greenway trails and walking trails than were out here before. As you said, we've worked on the architecture. And I think most significantly, after we were in front of you, I believe, late last year for our little affordable housing pep talk, in fact, we have come back and we now have a little bit over 15% affordable housing. So we feel we meet those goals that were discussed at that meeting. For those and several other reasons in working with staff and the advisory boards, even though it's been a long process, and I will tell you that when we first submitted this, there was no floodplain on this property. That's something new that's come up, and although we're very sure that it does not adversely affect this property, we're comfortable with that, and that's one of the stipulations. And we're, by the way, we're very comfortable with all the conditions that staff has come up with, including, you'd think 2.5 years through the process, we would have caught those street trees on the other side of Lake Hogan Farm Road. Those will certainly get on there. But also 2.5 years ago, the idea of a county park, the Twin Creeks District Park, and a new elementary school were just an idea. Well, now those projects are funded, and they're going to move ahead. And, in fact, I think the school is here tonight asking for expedited review. And this project, as Jeff said, will actually bring that sewer about a quarter mile closer to that school that will be needed to open that. And for that and many other reasons and all the assistance they've given us on this, we hope that you will give us a positive recommendation for approval tonight so we could move forward with that. Thanks.
Robert Dowling, and then we'll go back to Alderman Brown, who had a few questions for the staff and the applicant, I think.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Members of the board, my name is Robert Dowling with Orange Community Housing Land Trust. I'm not here to advocate for or against this proposed development. I'm just here to share with you some ideas, and I wrote some of them down, about the housing piece. I've been doing this for about 10 years now, and I've made most of the mistakes you can make doing it. I'm still a few more ahead of me, I'm sure. I can see some in your future if you go down this this road. The applicant is proposing something that's allowed by the ordinance to not use land trust, use deed restrictions, price them 2.5 times. I guess I haven't specified where they're going to price them. But the second part of that sentence in the affordable housing density bonus says they have to make arrangements to ensure that they'll stay affordable for 100 years. And I don't envision the applicant, the developers, remaining involved in this thing once the project is completed and built out. I'd say they're probably going to move on, be down the road. And when those affordable homes come back on the market the second time, who's going to look after them? You know, we can't, because they're going to be too expensive, which is why they're not in a land trust. So I expect it's going to be Steve is going to get a
You
get a phone.
You never know what science can do.
As the town staff is going to get the phone call and say the first person wants to sell their home, and of course by that time they will have forgotten that there's any restrictions. They're going to price it where the market is, and it's going to be, oh, I can sell my house for $200,000, and they're going to sell it, and there's going to be a contract, and the closing attorney for the buyer is going to do a title search, and you're going to see this deed restriction and say, wait a second, what's this all about? That's when Steve's phone rings. And you guys will have to deal with that, and who's going to do that, and who's going to qualify buyers, and who's going to set the price, and there's just things that you pay us to do that we do that no one's really going to be in place to do in this instance. And I can tell you, if you approve this the way you is proposed, there will be others in line right behind this developer who want to use the same route because it's better for them. It makes sense. You don't have to price it where it's really affordable at 80%. You all approved an ordinance back in, I think, 1999 that was intended to have housing affordable at 80% of median. Well, I was involved in writing that ordinance, and it doesn't really work. But that was 7 or 8 years ago. That was one of the mistakes. And so we've learned since then, but it's still in the ordinance, and so they have an opportunity to make use of that. But I just want to caution you. I don't know what you do about it. I'm just here to caution you that there'll be a time in the future, and 10 years from now, Steve may still be here, I may still be here, some of you might even still be here, but none of us may be here. And June 27, 2006, this is all, we're all aware of this, but June 27, 2016, if none of us are here and this thing comes up and the developer's long gone, what's anybody going to do? That's why you have nonprofits who hopefully survive and are here to deal with the same thing. So I just want to raise those points. Again, I don't have the answers. I'm just raising some issues that I think are going to be. And the last point is the ordinance says that the pricing is limited to 2.5 times the MSA number. 2.5 times, 80% of the median for a household of four. That number hasn't changed in 4 years. So if the developer built that house 4 years ago and sold it for the maximum price, someone bought it and wanted to sell it today and they said, oh, my house is worth $200,000, they can't sell it for one dime more than they bought it for. Think about that phone call. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, I guess. Yeah.
It's okay. Looks like we have two other people who wish to speak. You, sir, and then you. Actually, can both of you come up and be sworn real quickly by the clerk, and then
Lieutenant Bible?
Do you want to go ahead and be sworn at the same time? Yeah. Do you solemnly swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Thank you for letting me comment. I didn't realize I needed to sign up ahead of time. I appreciate it.
You don't necessarily, but...
Okay. Is it possible to get a site plan that... My name is Rob Carr. I'm a property owner in the Lake Hogan Farms area right across from the proposed property. Is it possible to get a site plan that shows the Hogan Hills Road on the south side?
No.
when you went through your presentation, I thought there was a bunch that showed the lot lines that give the context.
You
can see them showing up there.
That's the right-of-way right there.
Yeah.
That is not constructed. This one here and show. Let's see here. No, that doesn't have it. Let's see. This one, sort of.
Can you pull that with GIS?
Put this on the overhead. It's shown on our handout. Okay. If you put that on the overhead.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, goody. Let's see. Hold on to your hats. I pushed a button there. Marty, help. There we go. The hand of Marty. Is that enough? Yeah, I mean, that's good. I appreciate that. Actually, does it show the
intersection of Long Meadows?
The townhomes. And that's good. Oh, I see they're split in half. Okay. The reason I wanted to see this Hogan Hills Road is that road is existing now, and that's one of my main concerns is traffic on that road, and there was a gentleman that spoke earlier from Lake Hogan Farms that shared that concern, and I can tell you from living with my backyard on that road that there is already a lot of, high-speed traffic, especially at night. And when you can see the whole context of the site, there's one intersection here, and then it's straight to Old 86. So you got two long straightaways. And I appreciate that the project is apparently adding a speed bump in the middle there. But I would also endorse a circle either at that intersection that's not shown on this overhead, or additional speed bumps, or maybe there's just some assessment that happens down the road after it's built. And, the reason, not only is it a straightaway, but it's the only collector in Lake Hogan Farms that has no lots on it. And the Lake Hogan Farms Road coming off of Homestead has a series of speed bumps. There must be three or four within a pretty short segment. So that's one issue I had. The second and third issues, and that's all I have, are I'm actually want you to consider moving the affordable housing closer to me. And the reason for that is that, surprising. I strongly support affordable housing. What I'm concerned about is that my backyard is basically opposite this parking lot, and so I'm basically right here. And, I don't really want to be seeing a lot of headlights pointed at my first floor bedroom. And I know there's some screening that's shown in the plan, and from the staff report I saw, it looked like the screening is not solid. It's described as intermittent, so there's some, gaps in the screening. So I'd like to see either know if it was considered to switch where the parking lot is versus the townhomes, to swap those, or to have some more solid screening along the south edge of that lot. And really, I'd prefer to switch the parking lot with the townhomes, move the townhomes closer to the south side. And I realize, for the applicant, that's going to make the lots across the street to the north less attractive, but really that's my point, because that's what it's doing to the existing lots that are on the south side. And, if I was a future buyer, at least I'd have the knowledge that that parking lot is there, whereas when I bought, I knew there was going to be some development, but I didn't know there would be a parking lot. The last concern I have is the lighting in that parking lot. And I know there's some limits for lighting at the property boundary, but I don't know if that applies to the lighting that's associated with the parking lot. And that's all I have. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks very much, sir.
Um,
Mr. Mayor, members of the Board of Aldermen. My name is Randolph Reed. I'm the division president with David Weekly Homes. I wanted to address the affordability issue. We have our attorney who's worked with the town attorney, Mr. Jeff Benson, Kilpatrick Stockton, here tonight. We feel like that we've been able to address the insured affordability through the deed restrictions and working with a requirement in the Homeowners Association documents that the Homeowners Association also mandate and sign a certificate that the unit is being transferred within the affordable guidelines. This is the same association that's going to be in charge with managing the bioretention areas and some other devices within the community. So that should be an ongoing community association. It'll be there in perpetuity as long as the homes are there, and somebody would be elected in that regard to be the official that would sign and document that the transfer was being taken place at the price point that was mandated by the affordability guidelines. So with those two issues, we feel like that we've addressed, as well as can be addressed, the insured affordability of those townhome units. And our attorney's here and can answer any legal questions that the town attorney might have, but I think that's been discussed. But we did take that extra step to ensure the affordability. And basically, at this standpoint, we agree that, you know, we feel like we're meeting the ordinance. And I met with Mr. Dowling, and I've told him that we don't have any preconceived notions. We'd be happy to work with him if he had clients that were interested in purchasing one of the townhomes, and the way they're deeded, he could have one of his clients purchase one of the townhomes, and if we had another buyer that met the criterion, then they could purchase them. So we, at this point, we're just not, we would like to be able to control how we market those ourselves. Since we are a home building marketing company, that's what we do. We market homes in this price range throughout the southeastern United States, and so we feel like we're capable of doing that, but then we'd welcome any assistance that Mr. Dowling or any other agency could provide to us. Thank you very much.
Okay. Anyone else? All right.
I've got several questions. All right. To Jeff, that 100-year flood, we will know with any certainty when, I hate to say it, FEMA will determine whether it's not a 100-year flood, or are they the entity that does it, or is there some other federal government entity that does it?
My understanding is that ultimately, if there is a rise through that extension, mm-hmm. let's say it's rising, you know, half an inch or so, it will have to go through FEMA and have a map revision done and go through that process. And because the modeling is, you know, takes time, I think the applicant was pretty close to getting there, but it's not, you know, hadn't finished it up, and we're hoping to do that in construction drawings.
Okay. Then I guess I have my next question is for the attorney. If someone violates the deed restrictions on the affordable housing homes, who would be the who would be the plaintiff? Who would be the defendant? How would we enforce it?
Well, I think that in part that depends on how the deed restrictions and the covenants are written and who those instruments empower to enforce. I'm assuming, I haven't seen drafts of them myself,
right.
I'm assuming that the town, the homeowners association, other property owners in the development who in Harmony Farms are the three most likely candidates.
And so what would be the remedy if there was a violation?
Well, that's a good question, other than enforcement moving forward. I don't know that we could set aside, I just don't know the answer to the question, could we set aside a deed that violates the condition or the covenant? I suspect we might be able to make that action.
Okay. So that I can be clear, are there going to be two homeowners associations or one homeowners association? And whoever has the answer to that can speak to it.
Get sworn.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm
about the evidence you're about to give us the truth to the best of your knowledge.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Jeff Benson, representing the applicant. I mean, the answer to that question is that there will be one association governing the development. And what's contemplated is that the association here, as is typical in any residential subdivision, is going to be sort of running the show. It will, the stormwater, the parking regulations, the use restrictions, all those things that are in your covenants are going to be part of that here. In this case, will be the affordability covenant. And as Mr. Reed indicated, because of the importance of the affordability covenant, what we're proposing is to sort of have somebody, whether that's the association president or secretary or somebody, have a affirmative step when resales occur down the road of actually sort of signing something, the sort of clear title, if you will, that the affordability covenant is met as to this next sale, with the hope that that I don't want to say bureaucracy, but that step helps ensure that the compliance is there. And as to the who could enforce it, I mean, any homeowner in the entire subdivision could enforce it, including, for that matter, the buyer.
So who's going to pay for the attorney's fees?
That would be, frankly, governed in the same way that any other dispute under the declaration would probably simply be a matter of, again, it would depend on how it was brought, if it was an individual, if it was the association. It would be awful hard to imagine that it could happen, given the system we want to put into place where the association actually has to confirm compliance in order for a sale to go through. But I suppose any public citizen in that development could.
Okay. Can I ask just a follow-up question to Mr. Jewell? Because I said I had a lot of questions.
Go ahead. Please do.
My next question is, how many actually, not Mr. Jewell. I'm sorry. I forgot your name. Pardon me, sir.
Reed.
Mr. Reed. I apologize. I'm getting older and I'm more forgetful. How many developments have you developed with these affordable housing restrictions and covenants in them?
None.
Okay. That's all. Thank you. I'd just like to be heard at the time to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Jackie, did you?
Yeah, there's so much that I like about this project and that I've liked about the project from the beginning. I think just physically, I like it. I like its respect for the environment. I like how it's going to blend in with the parks and the school, and I think it's really good. I'm very worried about the affordable housing part of it. Homeowners associations are, you know, they are a combination of those of you who know what university politics are like. They're kind of a combination of departmental politics and town politics, and you just don't know. And there's so much money to be made in real estate speculation, which is one of the reasons why real estate prices are skyrocketing in our community. I could see somebody coming in, buying one of these, and bullying the Homeowners Association, or becoming head of the Homeowners Association, or, you know, I just don't see how they will stay affordable if it's not locked in either through the town or through the Housing Corporation, because there's just too much, it gives human nature and greed too much leeway, and I worry about that. Don't spin it.
I won't try to. I mean, just the a couple thoughts. One is the covenants aren't drafted yet, and the covenant, the condition for the recommendation, I think, says that the covenants that we draft have to be satisfactory to your attorney. I spoke with your counsel this afternoon and sort of talked through some of these issues, and I certainly don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he was in agreement that what we're proposing satisfies your ordinance. But keep in mind, too, that whatever system we put in place has to still pass muster with your counsel in terms of getting the covenants satisfactory. And that would include, you know, making satisfactory recourse in the event of a violation. Again, it's difficult for me to imagine that a violation can really happen if you have a system in place where someone has to sign something that says that it's compliant every time that there's a sale. But you can never say never. And, you know, we would put in the covenants a means of satisfactory redress, whether that's, you know, someone brings an action, there's a mandatory refund, or, you know, something happens where there is, you know, a practical remedy in the event of something. Also, I think that the deed restriction that we've drafted and shown to your council says that the town can take enforcement action. So if the town feels that the property owners association is asleep on the switch, the town would be able to step in and take enforcement action. Again, I think that's extremely unlikely, but we're trying to put the safety net there.
I wouldn't underestimate the ability of closing attorneys to do sloppy title work, but
I guess my comments are, what I want to say is, I commend the developers. I think I've been working with the town for 2.5 years, and it seems like you folks are good corporate citizens and want to do the right thing, and I like what I had seen there. And also, I like what I heard, that you folks are willing to work with the Land Trust, Orange County Land Trust. I mean, that's a vehicle. I think it will save you guys a headache, and it will save us many folks headaches, and it will help us achieve what we're trying. I mean, we're encouraging folks to work through the Land Trust for many reasons. And we got everybody here on the table, and to me that's something that seems, you know, you folks are reasonable people, and we can, I hope we can work that out. I mean, that's something that will solve many of the concerns that we're going to have, and, you know, down the road. And I haven't lived yet in a homeowners association neighborhood, but I do know that self-interest is what motivates all human beings, and I know that also folks will be looking for, when it comes to pricing and selling your houses, the decisions, how you make them and how affordable they are. I mean, everybody, when I hear the word affordable housing, meaning my house is going to depreciate, it's going to worthless, and to avoid all those headaches, I mean, we have a great tool. We support it. We encourage folks with that. Our staff supports that, and I will encourage you strongly to consider working with the Orange County Land Trust.
Without belaboring what's already been said, let's go back a couple weeks, and we had a presentation on inclusionary zoning as a general principle. One of the issues that arose was, frankly, the issue that Robert brought to us this evening, which is the difficulty in enforcing deed restrictions and the fact that homeowners associations are not set up to enforce these sorts of legal contracts. And as Robert pointed out, that's what Orange Community Housing and Land Trust does. That's its job. That's why the local governments set that organization up as our agent to do what, under the scheme that is being proposed here, are two organizations essentially that are not set up to deal with this issue would have to, which are A, homeowners associations, and B, the town. We don't have the infrastructure in place to do that. Right. Having said that, as Robert said, we talked about this. And we said to, and I don't know where we dropped the ball or who dropped the ball. I think we did. We dropped the ball, obviously, because we didn't instruct staff to do anything with it. But we had a conversation with our town attorney where this issue came up before as sort of an academic matter in which it was clear that the way we had set up the system is for Orange Community Housing and Land Trust to do this work. But we hadn't set up our own, essentially the ordinance, to direct that specifically to happen, even though that is specifically our intent. And Mike said, well, if you want to do that, I mean, if you want to do that, you can do that under any permit application, but you're going to have to do it on a case-by-case basis. It's going to be difficult. And what I can do, if you want, is draft the ordinance to explicitly state that. And I think this issue points up the fact that we need to, as Robert said, update the ordinance to fit what our policy is. Because they're, and I feel somewhat bad for the applicants because they are caught in the middle of that conflict. Having said all that, in addition to what's been mentioned around this table, both the Planning Board and the Northern Transition Area Advisory Committee have asked us to include it's different language, but the same spirit, have asked us to include a condition, and we appreciate in good faith you folks working on this, by the way, but in order to be consistent with our policy, a condition that sends them to the land trust and that the land trust will administer and market the units and be priced accordingly. Otherwise, I think you guys have done a great job. In fact, you...
Yeah, but let's, if we can, let's stay on this affordable housing. There are a couple other issues here, but let's stay on this affordable housing issue for the moment and see where we wind up with it. Dan or Joel? Okay.
Well, my only comment is that I've had experiences with homeowners associations, and in my professional career, let's just say that unless you have a separate entity other than the homeowners association to enforce problems with covenants, and I'm not just talking about affordability covenants, but other covenants, it's very difficult for a property owner to do that. And I would find it highly unlikely for them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I just would. I would be highly surprised. I don't think the system, it is a series of private contracts. Mm-hmm. And normally you really don't want to, I can't use the word I'm thinking about, but make your neighbor that angry. Because I know my mother is somewhere out there. So I'm not really criticizing your ability to draft a covenant. I'm just saying what the structure is. And I just don't think it works that well in order to enforce covenants. And, you know, that would be my position. I think we do have a vehicle for it. I'll leave the affordable issue alone and just that would be my position. You know, I think they've done a good job designing the property, but I have grave issues with the affordability piece, and it is a public need that we have in Southern Orange County. I can't repeat it enough. It is a need that we have in Southern Orange County. In fact, all of Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't want to start a trend where one, our decision to maybe do it a little differently in the way that we have done that starts a trend where everybody wants to do it differently. And there is a critical factual need. One would only look at the Orange County Economic Development Office's report. The last 4 years, it is a critical need. Factually critical. And so I would just urge the board to remember that I have some other remarks, but I'm going to limit it to that at the moment.
Okay. We'll come to some of the other issues. It seems to me, and I think if I understood what Alex is suggesting, I support what he's saying. It seems to me, taking Joel's point one step further, that the reality is that it should not be the town of Carrboro's burden to enforce these affordability requirements long term. We're not set up for it, and it should not ultimately be our responsibility. But if it falls to the homeowners association or individual members, individual property owners in the subdivision,
I guess my question would be, what is their incentive to invest the resources, either their personal resources or the collective resources of the association, in struggling around this issue and fighting to ensure that the long-term affordability is maintained? And it seems to me that if there was any way that that this was going to happen through these deed restrictions and homeowners association process, that there would need to be a significant incentive. There would need to be a consequence of failure articulated in deed restrictions. Right now, Orange County, as a community, in creating an affordable dwelling unit through Habitat for Humanity or Empowerment or in the recent past through the Land Trust, invests figures like $35,000 and I think approaching even like $50,000 in some cases now into doing that. And we're going to have 10 affordable units. That's the proposal for this development. It seems to me that there should be a $50,000 consequence to the homeowners association failing to uphold its responsibilities if this is the direction that things head, and that figure would need to be inflation adjusted over time in order to ensure that the incentive remains strong over a long period of time. Now, I don't think that's a great solution either. But as some people have pointed out, apparently our ordinance still allows people to do this with deed restrictions. We may change that for the future, but I don't think we can change it in midstream on this particular applicant. But I guess, you know, my concern or issue is I think it would be far easier for the applicant to get back together with Land Trust and to figure out a way to make Land Trust model fit in with what they're doing on this particular site, rather than having to write a set of deed restrictions that include, you know, $500,000 worth of contingent liabilities hanging over the head of the homeowners association going into the going forward into the future for 99 years or whatever. So, you know, I'm inclined at this point to simply say, you know, that, and we haven't even gotten to the other issues with this subdivision, which are minor by comparison, but they're still there. I'm inclined to say that this subject should be sent back to our staff and to the applicant and to the Land Trust for some further discussion and come back to us in August or at whatever time the applicant feels that they've made some forward progress on this issue. Mr. Attorney, and then Danny.
I just want to emphasize for the board that, you know, the way our ordinance is written right now, and Mike Bro had the same concern about it, is we can't require these guys, we can't require them under the code to say you deal with the land trust, that's the only way to deal with the affordable housing issue. I mean, the deed restrictions and the covenants are a permissible method under our ordinance. I think what we're talking about here, though, is and I think Mayor Chilton, some of your ideas are important for concepts for discussion, at least, about, okay, if we're going to use this model, the deed restriction and covenants, we've got to be very, very careful about how we draft that, what mechanisms we put in for enforcement, what kind of carrots and sticks we might have in there to both encourage them living up to it and subsequent owners living up to the standard, but also to penalize them if they don't. So, and you know, I haven't seen, nor has Mike seen, any kind of language that really fleshes out the kinds of covenants and the kinds of language we might be talking about here.
I guess what I'm trying to suggest is that if this is not going to be done through the land trust, and that, you know, apparently under the ordinance is their right, then I really, it's not as simple as that. I just want to defer this subject to be approved by our staff, but I want to see how is it really going to work, mm-hmm. and how will these incentives be adequately there and in place to ensure that the homeowners association is going to step up to the plate and actually do their job. That's where
That's at least where I am.
Well, I've been wondering, and I have no idea whether this is workable or not, so you all enlighten me. But you know, I understand that the land trust can't sell it because they can't, people at less than 80% can't afford to buy it. But there's a question whether, in my mind, whether the land trust or some comparable entity might be able to own it. And by that I mean, what I'm thinking along the lines of is, say, if the land trust had a 1% share of ownership in this, that any sale would require a sign-off. In other words, a sales contract, the beginning point of the sale process, would require Dowling or whoever's signature or some other organization, and that would give them, that would kick in then the qualification process for the buyer by the people who know how to do it. So, you know, I have no idea whether that's workable. So, you know, if the attorney has a comment or if anyone else has thoughts on that, but it's one way to get there.
I think the issue is, as Robert pointed out and Dan teased out again, is to have an objective agent to handle that and manage the administration of that. And, of course, as Alex said, that is right in line with what Anita Brown Graham had suggested. Homeowners associations, you look at some of the issues that come up when homeowners associations have responsibility for stormwater issues. I mean, there's all kinds of concerns. And then when you project out, you know, 50 years, 75 years, 100 years, you don't know how things change. And we can't vision how you know, things are going to change. So, yeah, I think that if there were a way to create, you know, a situation that would work with the land trust, I think that would be the best of all possible situations. If not, looking to have you know, an outside agent that would be responsible for handling it.
Would you like me to respond to Mr. Coleman's suggestion? Because I think it's workable. I mean, let me just emphasize, we're not trying to create a system that's not going to work. We're not trying to skirt anything. We're not trying to get around anything. It's our thinking that you have about as permanent an agency as you have in a homeowners association. It's typically there for the length of the development. But if it made the board feel better to have that sort of check-the-box sign-off come not from the association president but from the affordability agency as part of our declaration, as long as they're willing to accept that, again, check-the-box role, That's I think that's something we can live with within the declaration, and that gives you that third-party comfort level that it sounds like you're looking for above and beyond the association, or both. I mean, that would be I think that's something that we can work with.
Oh, okay. I want someone who will have standing to sue if it's not done right, and I want someone to have some money to sue if it's not done right. And let's be clear. You know, there are plenty of people who write different agencies to the department, to state government, who says my homeowners association isn't validly following the restrictions. Mm-hmm. They're not validly keeping up the covenants. And you have to send them a letter that says it is unfortunate, but the way things are set up, it is a private lawsuit. So, graduated in 1986. It's a private lawsuit. Those little bands of sticks that we always talked about in, you know, in property. But I'm talking about what the practical, what the circumstances are. Now, I kind of like his idea about a bond. You know, and I guess you'll have to determine and talk to some people in the title insurance industry what they will insure title for, because that really is the issue. You know, when it comes down to it, can you have somebody insure title? And we as a board don't want to prevent people from being able to do that. But on the other hand, We also want to follow the policies that we have delineated in the Vision 2020 in the northern transition area and for the fact circumstances that we have in this county, and especially southern Orange County. There is a great need for affordable housing. A great need for affordable housing. I can't emphasize that enough to the people who are developing this property and who own the property. It is a great need. And that's what we are in a position in. And we have a town that says that's important to us. We want working people to be able to own a home. We understand that is wealth creation. And so I want you to understand how important that is to us and how some of us know how homeowners associations work. I live in a subdivision with a homeowners association, and it is a struggle to get people to run to be on the board. And we don't have any of these kinds of issues. We had to remove 67 ducks. That's without the issue. We've got to remove a beaver. You know, the kid's like looking at it, but he's knocking down trees as we speak. So let's be real about what we're talking about.
Right. Let's sort of go back to the legal. Mr. Attorney, it's been a long time since I've actually looked at the language in the ordinance. As I recall, the language is fairly general. Am I correct or incorrect in that it doesn't specify what legal instruments are to be used?
Just so happens I have the language right here.
I figured you might. You want to tell me what
read
it says?
Read in a little excerpt from it. And this is in section 15-182.4A, and it talks first generally about the 80% rule, and this is a paragraph II, with respect to which the developer has arranged for the affordable housing units to remain affordable as described herein for a period of not less than 100 years, commencing from the date of initial occupancy of the units, by including provisions to ensure such continued affordability in legally binding agreements, including but not limited to ground lease, a deed restriction, or other covenant running with the unit. And this is such agreements shall be reviewed and approved by the town of Carrboro prior to initial occupancy of the units.
Reviewed and approved. Okay, having said that, in approving such an instrument, common sense tells me, but common sense and the law are very often at odds. Common sense says to me that one would have to make a determination that those agreements would be, as a practical matter, enforceable over the period of time specified in the ordinance. Yes, no. And that this board could make a finding that such an instrument, as a practical matter, given the infrastructure in place, is or is not enforceable. Yes?
I think that's right.
So, given the conversation that we have just had at great length, in my view, I am not even close to convinced that the instruments being put forward to satisfy that section of the ordinance, which allows the density bonus to use, are, as a practical matter, given the infrastructure that we have, enforceable. Mm-hmm. And that the only infrastructure that we have as local governments set up that does create an enforceable situation is the agency that we contract to do this work. And so, frankly, I think there's a finding available to us which says that we need to redirect this process. However, I'm more than willing to entertain Mark's suggestion that if the applicants and the staff have clearly heard the intent of this board, and they go back and try and hammer something out, and I certainly don't want to dump something on Robert that doesn't fit within his organization's bylaws and structure. We can't make him do something that we haven't contracted for him to do in the bylaws that we as the local government set up. So, if that's not too rambling. Do you see where I'm getting here?
I'm real anxious to hear our attorney's response.
All I want to say is we haven't seen the language. I don't know what I mean. What an idea of what the concept is, but but we haven't, you know, the devil's in the detail.
Right.
And what I'm really hearing is we need to see more detail about what kind of mechanism the covenants in particular, I think it has to be a deed restriction, the covenants might set up before I think the board is going to be comfortable with saying we're satisfied.
But as a practical matter, if we don't even have an infrastructure in place that we are convinced as a practical matter can enforce the instruments, then it's not an enforceable instrument, and we can make a finding to that effect, right?
Well, I'd like to step back from that and just say that if they can provide a document that satisfies staff, legal staff and town staff, because there are legal requirements and there are practical factors, then I would be happy with that. But I think you know where the board is standing.
Well, and didn't Jeff, is that right?
Yes.
Say that that this is something they could go back and discuss further with the land trust, and maybe that should occur before.
I think that's what the intent of what Mark was saying. Okay.
Yeah, and I think what Alex and I are saying is really not that different. Yeah. I'm just
trying to figure out what kind of place we're skating on here.
Yeah, I think what we're saying is that the ordinance says is that there may be a number of ways to do this. And I think what the board is saying is that we're not satisfied at this point that we've arrived at one of the ways of doing this, and that we're going to need to see something that is that addresses all these different concerns that have been raised here. Can I suggest that we turn our attention to a couple of the other issues with the development at this point?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Actually, Bob, do you still want to come up very briefly? You need to be sworn.
You solemnly swear from the evidence you're about to give us the truth to the best of your knowledge.
Yes.
Thank you.
I do, and I appreciate you allowing me to step up here at such a late time here. I was trying to stay back and just watch it on television, and I just... In the time that I saw it drove over here, I was hoping you didn't close the public part of the hearing. One of the biggest concerns I have here is a misunderstanding of the role of an association. When it comes to the sale of a unit or property, we don't have a role to play in that. It's not our property. Property-wise, as far as it's in subdivision and as far as the association is concerned, unless this was a condominium or a co-op, the owner owns the lot that the building is built on and the building itself. The association only owns the common area, which would be the where the drainage area is. We have no ownership of the lot itself or the building. We have no role to play in the sale of that building. I've pissed off quite a few realtors in this area when I send them, say, we're not doing your work for you, you go do your own homework. We're not involved. We don't come to the table. We don't get paid to come to the closing table. We're not involved at all. The only thing we say is, are there any outstanding liens? That's all we play in this. So the basic concept here is we're not even involved in enforcing or being a police staff of a covenant as such. You know, use of the common area, that's what we get involved with. When it comes to a sale of property, we're hands off. We have no legal means to be there. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Attorney or Joel. You know?
It all depends on how you set up the association, basically. Ordinarily, that's absolutely correct.
Right. Not a traditional role, is, I guess, the point. All right.
A second concern I have is with the layout of the association, when you have a combination of townhomes and single-family homes, the needs involved with the infrastructure for single-family homes and townhomes are in two different animals. And I was a little concerned when the applicant was putting in that he's going to have just this one grand homeowner association trying to manage all that. It is unmanageable in such a scale. And it's going to be, you're going to have someone, particularly when you have a mixture of affordable housing and townhomes with some very specific needs and common shared needs between them, and landowners who really don't have anything for example, when with townhomes, you're going to be in interest of who's going to replace the roof, which is going to involve the entire building. The homeowner association won't get involved with that on an individual home, but they would be with a townhome. The need, there's a big separation in needs, and I'm highly would recommend that at least be broken down to two associations or possibly three, with a master association involved with just the common areas for both, such as the cutting of the lawn or the entranceways or the signage to the entranceway, an association just for the homeowners and their needs, and an association for the townhomes. One third item that I was surprised didn't come up, and I'll be brief about this, and I couldn't find out in the documents that were online here, I have concern with, I have to come back to fire code ordinances here. I do believe in the townhomes, they're going to be required to be put sprinkler systems in, and if I'm not mistaken, I can be corrected here. Part of the code requires that the alarm system goes back to the town or the fire station. Specifically on these townhomes, which are so-called affordable housing. None of the single-family homes are required to have this. If you look at the history of the town of Carrboro, you have a greater problem of fire in single-family homes. And at least in fairness, you should at least be one requiring all homes to have a sprinkler system. Else, maybe, since these are affordable housing, we leave the owner of the alarm system having to go back to the town and just have these, maybe stick it with the sprinkler system if it's affordable enough. But in lieu of that, maybe encourage the developer to use a more energy-efficient appliances as opposed to the low end, go a little step up higher that will make the cost of the utilities more affordable to the person living in those affordable housing. So those are just three basic concepts I wanted to bring up here. Thank you for your time.
All right, Bob. Thanks, Bob.
So you need to state your name for the record?
I'm sorry, Robert Kirshner. I'm in Carrboro.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for making that point, Dan. Okay, so turning for the moment from affordable housing, could the applicant address this question for me about the suggestion about a traffic circle?
Just to clarify, we're talking about the intersection of Long Meadows and Epplegreen Hills, right?
Yes, my understanding is Mr. Vickers' comments on traffic calming all really had to do with Hogan Hills Road. A little bit of history. Hogan Hills Road was originally, on the first go-around of Lake Hogan Farms, not proposed. We were going to have internal circulation to the patio home areas and that sort of thing. But at that time, the consensus among town staff and their consulting engineer at the time was that a thoroughfare was needed to connect east to west back over to Lake Hogan Farm Road. Of course, at that time, nobody was thinking of traffic calming. In fact, when we originally designed Lake Hogan Farm Road, we had to fight with the town engineer at that time, who was no longer the town engineer, who actually wanted to super elevate Lake Hogan Farm Road. And it was all based on fire trucks being able to drive 60 miles an hour through the neighborhood and get from one space to another. Fortunately, we won that battle. Traffic calming measures on Hogan Hills Road certainly would be within the purview if the Lake Hogan Farms Homeowners Association wanted to come back to the town. It may require an amendment of the conditional use permit, the original conditional use permit, to do that. I don't think our client would be interested in paying for those specific improvements, particularly a roundabout, a rotary, which is quite expensive. But we are putting the speed table in, as you can see. And the road that we're building through this neighborhood does have quite a few traffic calming measures in it, as WASP narrow downs and that sort of thing.
I think bears pointing out that, that I like the roundabout idea, frankly, but, you know, I understand Dan's perspective as well. Two advisory boards have recommended a four-way stop be placed at that intersection. Mm-hmm. It's a less expensive traffic calming device. Mm-hmm. with supposedly the same effect if you have decent enforcement. But
right. Thinking along the same lines but about future problems rather than present ones, Lake Hogan Farm Road will connect
eventually we'll go to Eubanks Road.
Go to Eubanks Road. And I guess I wonder about the same type of, say it again for me if you would. There is a speed table, I see it there on the plan that's proposed on, Hogan Hills Road. But what about on Lake Hogan Farm Road? Are you proposing something? Did you say you were proposing something?
We are not. And
well, there is the speed table right here. It's buried in there.
Okay. I'm Lake Hogan Farm Road. We're certainly if the staff or you want additional speed tables or something in, we'd be happy to put those in. Because that is part of this project.
And how far is that speed table from Old 86?
That one there?
Yeah.
Probably 2,000 feet.
Okay. Way in there.
About a half mile run right before you hit it. Yeah.
As you point out, that it's been recommended anyway by some of the boards that we would have a four-way stop,
right.
Whatever, 1,000 feet over that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then board members, if you'll indulge me for a minute longer. So if you can turn to the previous page in that booklet, and the one that's on the overhead projector there. So here's the other thing I'm wondering about is who owns these properties to the north here, or what is the that's not the park there.
There's an application in for property which actually wraps around.
Right.
It's currently called Ballantyne MI Homes.
Right. Okay.
They're probably going through advisory boards right now. I'm sure you'll see it later this fall.
Yeah, I think I've heard something about it. Okay. And I guess the other question I'm wondering about, there may be a great answer to this question, but why would Long Meadow Road not continue on to the north? Given what our connectivity policy, I realize that the connector roads policy calls specifically for this one connection to go through at the far end of your subdivision, but the policy also in a broader sense says neighborhoods should interconnect with one another.
Right. We had a long discussions with that, with the Ballantyne folks and with the staff early on in the project. And the staff recommendation originally was to make that, actually not that connection, but actually an east-west connection, some connection through.
Uh-huh.
The two compelling reasons, one, were that the connectivity is actually Hogan Hills Road. You simply come out and you're connected next way over. The second issue is, if you can see the fingers of it coming down into this property, but as you go up into the property to the north, that very wide floodplain and wetland area just keeps continuing on and on and on way up toward Old 86. And we certainly didn't want to get into another road crossing, which, by the way, it will be quite expensive to build the Lake Hogan Farm road crossing on the other side in those environmental impacts. But we didn't want to impose another one on this property, particularly since there's a greenway trail proposed that we're going to be building on our property. So street connectivity is a good thing, but to a point where you start getting more environmental impacts, we felt those actually outweighed the connectivity issues.
On traffic stuff?
No, actually, it was just that unless people had some additional questions, it sounds like we've kind of gone over the issues that have been brought up. And so, as is our tradition, when there are significant issues at play, we do not decide on a permit the night that it is heard.
Yeah.
And I think that, let me ask this. Has staff gotten, I think, adequate direction from, as well as the applicants, from this board in terms of the issues that we think need to be worked out prior to this board making a decision?
Jackie, Dan.
I did have some questions about the issues that were brought up by the neighbor. about the parking lot facing the backyard of the folks on the other side of Pocan Hills Road. And, you know, I can see why you wouldn't want to have trees there one day and then 3 months later there are, you know, car lights at 1 o'clock in the morning coming in your bedroom window. That nobody wants that. Is there any adjustments that can be made to alleviate that?
What we've done since the meeting we had last year with the Lake Hogan Farms Homeowners Association, a couple of things. One, if you bother to look at the grading plan, you'll see that we've lowered those parking lots down so they're actually quite a bit below the level of Hogan Hills Road.
Okay.
There's also an extensive amount of evergreen landscaping in there. And again, it wasn't just by accident or we felt one way or the other that those are there. We consciously tried to create this on both ends, this architecture on the village green concept and not have the parking in front of the buildings. And by the way, there aren't trees out there right now. It's all open. He looks at horses right now, which is certainly nice.
Okay.
But that was the intent.
Thank you.
Is that where the swale is and the buffer at the back of those parking lots?
The swale.
I thought there was a... what? No. There was a... A berm.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So that's
parking
where the
lots lower,
right,
berming
and berm.
Landscaping.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to hide those cars completely from the road.
Okay.
Here's a motion. Move that we continue the public hearing until the next public hearing date. Ask the staff and applicants to work on the following three things: to work with Orange Community Housing and Land Trust to arrive at a affordability scheme that meets the concerns that this board has raised about enforceability, and with a particular eye to the infrastructure that is in place in order to accomplish that. Two, address the traffic calming issues along Lake Hogan Farm and Hogan Hills Road. Am I missing anything? Three, address the buffer issue between I can't read those lot numbers in Hogan Hills Road. Is that what we're talking about? Or not?
Yeah, I think that's. Is there a second for that motion?
Second.
Well, wait. Are the buffer issues the what was just
the townhome?
Yeah.
Parking lot.
Yeah.
Buffer
issues.
So, but
doesn't that sound like Dan's already addressed that?
Yeah, I think he just spoke to that.
Okay,
so
it just sounded to me like there were some other concerns out there.
I would agree with the first and the second, but I don't know that there's need for the third.
Hey, if y'all are happy campers, we can drop number three.
Strike it.
You got it, one and two.
Okay.
Is there a suggestion about to discuss, does that include the positioning of the four-way stop at the Hogan Hills Road and Long Meadows Road?
Sure, we can specify that if you like.
Or traffic calming.
With a particular eye towards the intersection of what I said was along Lake Hogan Farm and Hogan Hills Road, but if you want to specify the intersection of
that.
Okay.
Yeah, going friggin' blind.
No, it's hard to see actually.
Hogan Hills and what?
Hogan Hills and Long Meadows.
That's right. And Hogan Hills and Long Meadows.
I just wanted to be sure that the stop sign thing is
right, so it's
relatively inexpensive.
Well, you'd prefer us to be more specific.
I probably do.
Okay.
So that has been moved and seconded with the four-way stop specifically mentioned, and item three about landscaping issues withdrawn from it. And it was seconded?
By me.
By Joel. All those in, and that our next public hearing date would be August 22nd or something. August 22nd. So it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. We're breaking for...
Did you read my letter?
Not yet.
No.
Okay. All right. I'll look it over. Okay. Welcome back to the June 27, 2006 Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. With the permission of the board, let me suggest that we jump forward to item C2 because a request for expedited review of the development plans for elementary school number 10 because our esteemed Chapel Hill Carborough City School Board Chair, Lisa Stuckey, is here. And Lisa, did you want to come up and address this point for a moment?
I just want to thank you all for giving this consideration. I sent a letter to Mark, actually I think it went out June 23rd, requesting an expedited review for elementary number 10. As we speak, the county commissioners are meeting and are receiving a presentation from the district about moving this school forward so that it could open in 2008 and not be delayed until 2009. For that to happen, we need to move quickly through the Carborough review process. We would be real grateful if we could do that. I have Bill Mullen here from our staff who's been working with your staff since February on this school. So we've been proceeding as fast as we could as we sort of waited to see the funding situation clarify at the county commissioner level. So what they have told us is that they will provide, I believe tonight, that they will vote to provide us with the funds necessary to move it forward over the summer. And at the end of the summer, they will decide whether they can provide sufficient funding for us to actually begin construction and open it in 2008. So that's sort of where it stands. If we don't move forward quickly, we'll lose the opportunity. So thanks. I'm glad, or Bill's glad, to answer questions that you all may have.
Randy. I actually have a question for Bill, and it came up, you know, not connected with this directly, but there was a question at one of our earlier meetings this month about potentially having an expanded adult gymnasium, and what would be that the cost of expanding the gymnasiums for adult recreational as an adult recreational amenity.
Come on up, if you would, to the podium. To
gymnasium or swimming pool?
Andy, we estimated the difference between the multipurpose room, which is part of the elementary school program, to a full gymnasium, about 5,500 feet. Right now, the school is being built without a full gymnasium. It's being designed, without a full gymnasium. So the 5,500 square foot at the budget rate of $170 would be the budgeted difference.
$935,000.
Give or take.
Approximately.
About $1 million. Mm. No, it's more than
that. 170 times 5,500. Yeah. 850,000 plus 85,000 would be about,
yeah,
not bad.
It would just seem to me, with Renee saying not being the jewel up there, the little, you know, the park, that having a gymnasium that would accommodate adult recreation, in addition to having youth recreation right there, would be a really wise move looking towards recreational needs in that area in the future. I know that the funding is not there from the town of Carborough, but you know, I think it's important to consider some way to look at that.
Well, it's not available from the district as well, so it would have to be available from another source. And I suppose that would probably mean the county commissioners. And we have not heard any indication on their part that they wish to pick up the tab for that.
I think that is very...
Well, but I agree with you. I mean, we've got we're essentially building Rashkus Elementary, That's the Twin Creeks School, and that includes a community gym where we partnered with the town of Chapel Hill.
Right, right.
Okay. So, so that we're clear, we're talking about, you know, basically prioritizing this project and basically instructing our staff to put it at the top of their work list whenever they can to help cooperate with this project. But, of course, we still expect that this development is going to meet all the requirements of our development ordinance. And is there a motion?
Second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we instruct the staff to give as expedited review as feasible to this project. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Thanks very much for
Thank you.
Joining us
Thank
tonight.
You.
Good luck with the county commissioners.
Thank you.
Yes.
I don't know. Is anyone going to the chamber meeting on the 29th at 8 o'clock?
They're
talking about staff, yeah. though. They're not talking about staff. Right. I guess it's why.
Well, there's an interrelation with the school adequate right. facilities ordinance.
Yeah. So I'm just asking. Well, other than someone from my staff, I'm sorry.
if you need for us to provide you all with written information for that meeting, we'd be glad to run off a few extra copies.
That'd be great.
That'd be great. Something short.
Whatever you were going to provide.
Whatever we would provide to them, we will make sure that we get to you all through your staff.
Thanks,
Brad. I didn't know the guy from staff was going.
I don't know anything about it. I don't know.
I'll forward the email to you, but what I understand it is it is the 8 o'clock meeting at Southern Seasons, and the chamber is putting something on about Sappho, and I probably called it the wrong thing, Sappho, whatever, adequate use facility, that they're having at 8 o'clock on Friday, when's the 20th?
Thursday morning.
I'll send you the email.
Okay. It sounded like Roy would be willing to go if it was Southern Season, but. Okay, anyway.
Thank you. I couldn't go because I'd be at work.
Thank you. Mr. Manager, if we could have an extraordinarily brief presentation on item B3.
George and I have discussed that, and I'm quite confident it will be very short.
Well, that was brief, all right. Are there any comments from the public?
Move item B3.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Matter passed unanimously.
B4.
Do we have public hearing?
Not for this. I don't think we need to officially close public hearing, do we?
Let's close the hearing first.
Yeah.
That was what
Then we back up and close the public hearing.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Move what just got moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Item B4, same deal.
Close public hearing on
number 4. Second.
Is there anyone who wants to speak? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, may have been
seriously. Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Matter passes unanimously. Okay, and so then we are on to item B5.
Okay, B5 is a public hearing to consider a land use ordinance text amendment clarifying that the Appearance Commission is authorized to comment on the design of projects. On April 18th, the board requested staff prepare a draft ordinance clarify the responsibilities and authority of the Appearance Commission with regard to the review of design and proposed developments. Draft ordinance has been prepared. It's necessary for the board to hold a public hearing on the draft ordinance before taking any action. Trish can do a presentation. This is pretty straightforward. I think it's telling the Appearance Commission to do what they do. So,
Is there anyone here who would like to speak on this public hearing?
Move the public hearing be closed.
Right.
Been moved and seconded that we close the public hearing. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Move the item. Second.
So moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
Hey, we've just about caught up.
Okay. Agenda.
We need to move attachment E as well, adopting a statement explaining the reasons for adopting.
Is there a second?
Second.
Yep.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Yep. Thank you. Item C1
the long-range transit planning process with the transit partners. I would like to suggest we have the proposal is that we would appoint two people to the steering committee for the long-range transit planning study or process, and just I would suggest that we appoint the two people who represent us at the Transit Partners Committee, Dan and Alex, unless there's objection from someone other than them.
Hearing none. Nominations are
closed. If you object, you got to serve.
One other point on this. I don't know if people read the paper this morning, but Chapel Hill threw a little bit of a monkey wrench in the works. Which is, you know, the proposal was to have four university reps and two from each town, and not surprisingly, Chapel Hill, some council members didn't like that. And according to the paper, what they are going back to university with is either 4-4-2 or 2-2-2. So all three of those options give us two. I think the 4-4-2 we might not be comfortable with.
That's not acceptable from my point of view.
No. Well, you don't probably. Well.
Should you just go ahead and endorse the 2-2-2 formula?
Well, I think, you know, there may be some negotiation around this, and what happened over the past few weeks is that Mark was in communication with Mayor Foy about that. So I think, you know, maybe what we need is for Mark to have a sense of the board that we want our due.
How about 3-3-3?
Well, let me ask y'all this. I think basically we ought to have an equal size delegation with Chapel Hill at the very least, and that I feel there ought to be some room for some flexibility about how big of a delegation the university ought to have. I don't think they should have a majority, but my thinking about this was that they have been sort of coaxed along to come and join in this process, and they were sort of reluctant because they were had some reservations about where Chapel Hill and Carrboro might try to take this process, and I feel like those concerns are misplaced on the university's part, but that I can nonetheless understand why they are concerned. I think all of us, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but I think all of us in Carrboro are very sensitive to the cost of our public transportation system, but we are also very committed to making it work. And but it seems to me ultimately that whatever long-range plan we come up with, it needs to be something that all three of the transit partners have bought into and support. And that's where my thinking has been on the subject.
Well, I mean, you know, I would only say these two things. And I'll be silent for the rest of the summer, but I'll be back in August sometime. One, I think we should get an equal representation only because a vast majority of those students who don't live on campus live in Carrboro on what I call apartment row, where the buses do come, and a lot of them live in our community downtown and in some rental properties among town, and when I'm going to work or when I'm taking the bus, you can see people, as I drive to Eubanks Road, you can see people waiting for the bus, you know, to go into town to UNC. The second thing about this is, you know, my general thing is, let's get off the stick. Let's stop fighting about how many people are coming to the table, and let's please get down and talk, because I'm going to just tell all of you what I've said earlier. If there reaches a point where another entity gets tired of talking to you, they will go down to Jones Street and do the talking for you, and people will be unhappy.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Okay.
We'll take that point to heart.
You better tell your brothers to the east to take it on more than us.
Did we get a vote on there? Mark, did we get the vote on Alex and my appointment?
We will begin by having our delegation be at least Alex and Dan.
So moved.
Second.
All right, it's been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passing unanimously.
Mark.
Gosh, is that it? I want to...
Just so staff is clear, the resolution in the packet further references not only our two appointments, but that Chapel Hill would have two and the university would have four. Do you all want to modify that in any way?
I don't think that's the motion that we just passed. Okay. All that motion was that we were appointing these
okay.
two.
Okay, just
right.
make sure.
We're going to continue to have some discussions about what the rest of the composition of it will be. I just have one more thing to add, which is that there be a I should have mentioned this at the beginning. I'm sorry. I didn't think of it, but there will be a memorial service at Durham Memorial Baptist Church tomorrow at 1 o'clock for Rodney Murray. And that church is at 133 Robbins Road in Durham. And the phone number there is 596-7350. And I hope that as many of us as schedules will permit can be there tomorrow to show our appreciation for Rodney's work and also our support for his family.
Just along that line, Steve mentioned that you can go to the Hallwind Funeral Home website and directions are posted there.
Okay.
There's an obituary specifically for Rodney on that site, and there's a link to directions to the funeral home. Well, of course, it's too late for that for tonight, but to the church and also to the cemetery.
Okay.
I believe that there's a condolences book in the fire station.
There is a condolences book okay. in the fire department for folks who want to come in there to sign. Could I take a minute and mention what else that I know of, and we're continuing. We're working very closely with Chapel Hill, by the way, with the Chapel Hill Fire Department. There'll be an honor guard tomorrow made up, I believe, of Carborough and Chapel Hill firefighters.
Good.
Also, both departments are planning on having a piece of fire apparatus to lead from the church to the cemetery, which was something that was really important to Rodney. So I know those things will be happening. You'll notice that we had the flags flying at half-mast today and plan to do that through the service tomorrow afternoon.
Thanks very much. Is there another
item? I just have a brief item, very brief. As you probably noticed in some correspondence, we received word from NCDOT that they did not receive bids in the second round for the Homestead High School Road project. So I spoke to Dale briefly yesterday, just asked staff to look into it and work with NCDOT to find out what the next steps are so that the task force can take whatever actions are necessary to try to keep the ball rolling. Kind of looks like what we'll have to do is rebid for the spring, unfortunately, unless there's something else that can be done. But if there's if there are any remedies that we can use to perhaps see if there's a way that we can secure a bid now, but it's going to be hard to do in large measure due to the length of time that it took to complete right-of-way acquisition, kind of pushed everything back, and contractors already have their workload scheduled. That's as I understand what.
Wow.
Remember when I said barring any future hiccups, and I just knew there was going to be one, and son of a bitch, there it is. Have a great summer, everybody.
This one hopefully be cured by the passage of time, if nothing
else. Two items. One, the surveys for New Horizons Task Force will be accepted until July 6th, Friday, July 6th. And just that Jackie and I are working on the pre-summit work group for the Greenways Open Space and Preserve Commission summit. So
great.
Those are the two updates.
And I think the final thing I would just like to add is I unfortunately am going to be out of town August 15th, which is when our first meeting will be when we come back. And Joel may or may not.
I have to wait. I called and we don't have a date yet, so I may be, but I may
not. May or may not be here. She will be presiding if she is here, and I'm assuming that Alex Zaffron will preside if. Assuming that he can be here.
At least I get some warning this time.
You get a warning this time. But I may be, but I'll know closer to August the 15th.
All right. Okay. Thanks very much, y'all. Have a good summer.
Motion adjourned.
Second.
All those in favor.
Aye.
Aye. Have a good summer.